Hello, Attactioneers. Welcome to the Attack Action Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Morrow, and I'm new and improved.
And I'm your host, Colin Honigman, and I'm the same as I ever was.
I'm Blake Meyer, and I've never seen a book bigger about ghosts in my life.
Ghosts?
I'm Zane Johnson, and my mic looks totally normal on my screen.
What are you talking about, Zane? Why are we comparing mic size right now?
Also, Blake, that book says is called Chosts. It's very different than ghosts.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's about ghosts from Chicago.
All right.
Did your mic shrink when you entered that dark room, Taylor, or what happened?
It's the upgrade we use the Patreon money for. So yeah. Thank you, everybody who's subscribed. No, I have moved, clearly, if you're watching on the YouTubes. I'm in a new setup here, which is a couch setup, which is pretty nice. But the cord for our other microphone got cooked in my move. And thankfully, I have this pocket backup microphone. So it's passable. So here we are. And it's not the size that matters, Zane. It's how you use it. So
zip tied to a to a mic stand.
It's twist tied.
Resourceful.
It's totally safe. Yeah.
Sounds great. You know, we pulled it together. We went from being cooked to fully recording. So
it was so over, and now we are so back.
We're so back, baby.
Blake is cooking Valda over there while we're recording.
Anyway, welcome to episode 111. This is the one where me and Zane get to talk to Colin and Blake about how cool Pro Tour London has been. So here we are. Welcome to part two of the part one we did.
Yeah.
freshly back from Pro Tour London just mere days ago. Who's even counting the number of days it was?
Nobody is. No, like
Zane is actually back. Just
I did just get back.
The number of people who listen to podcasts the day they come out is very small compared to people who just listen to it. So whenever they can get to. So I'm not worried.
Which is also small.
Our stuff is evergreen. It's going to pop off in a few years.
Hope so. Yeah.
People are going to go, what was Pro Tour meta like right after that 2 week period?
That's say, right. Who did win the High Seas Art Draft?
Oh shoot, man!
Be me, I think.
I bet it's gonna be a harpoon.
Awesome.
Oh well, man,
we are here on our 11th episode to ask the Pro Tour gentlemen.
Pro players, known. Refer to us as pro players.
Yeah, thank you.
the pro
from
tour
what I
players.
Heard, you guys are more tour players.
You got to be a professional to be able to handle such a delicate piece of audio equipment. So
today in a meeting, I think I referred to a microphone as audio sensing technology.
You're not wrong.
I know what I said, which is also known as a microphone because I caught myself sounding like an idiot or an asshole, depending on your perspective. Anyways. Blake and I, who did not go and have not played in a Pro Tour yet, going to ask you guys some questions. We got Taylor, first timer, Pro Tour first timer, first time overseer, first time full English breakfast having. I don't know.
Big plane there, riding.
Big, there was yeah, a big lot plane
of,
riding.
Okay, look, I've been on a big plane before, but there were a lot long, of other big firsts. Plane riding. Yeah, long plane. Long plane.
Nice. Well, we'll get into the first later, maybe. And then Zane, who's gone to many. Have you been to every Pro Tour so far?
I did not go to Amsterdam, but all but that one.
That'd have been a good one to go to.
I know.
They got
two a year is too much. I mean, it's good for the people who can do it, but two PTs and Worlds in a year is a lot. And I think that they're smart to do two and then one and then two and then one. But the two in 1 year years is tough.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of travel for this dear game of ours. But yeah, I would love to hear about your guys' experience. Breaking down, I guess, you know, we can maybe start with your playing experience, you know, and then kind of circle out to the larger event, because there's lots of stuff that goes on in and around the Pro Tour. And then I guess we can all talk about the results together, as those were interesting. Question mark? TBD? I don't know. It's fine.
Oh, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah. Great. So I guess, you know, we'll start easy and we'll just check in. I know Taylor played Arachne Marionette because he's an assassin boy for life. There you go. Show us the tattoo. Great you. And then Zane, you were deciding between a couple decks before you left. So what did you end up rolling with?
I ended up playing a deck that was not even in the list of decks that I said was an option.
Classic Zane.
Which was not a PSYOP or anything. It was, I brought Enigma because I have the cards as like, oh, we'll use it to test in the hotel before the event, because I was going a few days early. And I was testing Enigma Aurora for someone else. Like, I was helping them play the Aurora Enigma matchup, just like, okay, I'll be the Enigma, whatever. And I just was winning. I was winning a lot against Aurora, and I was like, huh. And then I played against some assassins and I was winning, and I was like, I see why people like this. I think that this is the right choice for this event. And so the deck that I brought to be helpful ended up just being the deck that I played. So I was a first time Enigma. But yeah, it was actually quite a fun deck to play. I get why people like it. I get why people don't like it. And I'm glad it's gone now, but I had a good time getting to play her before she went.
What was funny too was listening to Zane tell that story like 40 times on Thursday and Friday, and like the reaction of everybody and Zane himself, like from nice to shaming him to him also being like, I'm playing an Enigma. But I think it's the right choice for the weekend. Turns out Zane was correct. So
it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Had you played a lot of Enigma before that, or?
I had not played a game of CC Enigma in my life. but that's, I had played enough Misfail, like limited and Misfail heroes, to like understand the Transcend stuff, like know the intricacies of timing windows and everything. And then it's really not that complicated of a deck. Like, there's obviously edges to be gained in some hard matchups, but your plan into aggro is not complicated. Your plan into, you know, certain things is not that complicated. So, you know, I wasn't playing it at 100% competency, but I knew how to play the Aurora matchup well, and I knew how to play some of the key matchups. But yeah, I was a very new Enigma player.
I think we should get some let's get some context here. So you guys played how many CC games each?
Five on day one.
And then what were you guys' records in the first five games?
One in four.
I started 2-0 and then lost three in a row.
Sheesh.
Which is very funny. What started the losing streak is very funny. And I can go into that now. If
go for it. Yeah. The floor is yours. I didn't know.
I'm 2-0. I'm feeling okay about it. You know, like, cool. I beat an Aurora. I beat a Marionette. Like, the deck's doing the thing. I play the Mirror. Okay. Let's, you know, this is a weird matchup. I've had the
50% into the mirror, right?
Yeah, who knows? I have the Mage Master boots. I have the 10Ks. You know, let's play the high rolly stuff, kind of, but whatever. We're like deep into the game. I have a 10K on board with my plus one counter from my gloves. So like I'm in a very powerful position. And my opponent attacks for 7 with the spectral shield because he's like astraled it and stuff from a previous turn. And I like go to the grave. There's no way for him to buff this. Like there's no, all the astrals are gone. Like everything's gone. I'm like, okay. I can block out, keep my thing, and then just do 10K into Metamorph, like put this thing away. He plays Grain that tips the scale to kill my 10K after I blocked with my hand, you know, it's like 8 block or whatever it was. And my 10K dies, getting one value from the blocking the grain. And then just like everything goes downhill from there. I lost to an Aurora or 2 Auroras after that. And it was just like so funny that like I was 2-0 in a winning position, grain that tips the scale, and then everything just like fell apart.
Damn, aptly named.
Truly, yeah. And it's funny because I like really loved that card, but yeah, unfortunate. I think ultimately it was probably incorrect to try to protect the 10K. I think you just let it die is like the smart thing to do. But I thought I was being clever and I was not.
That was one interesting thing I saw a lot from the Illusionist games was just how freely it seemed people would let the ward go, you know, it's like, and like recognizing the value that that brings, which is pretty cool. But I also find like it is pretty hard to balance that versus like how many threats you have left in your deck too, which is, you know, seemingly the hard part about playing this deck is specifically. But yeah, I could you know, that's crazy. Any notable opponents in our first 5 rounds?
No, nobody I knew.
And then fast follow-up, did you sit down and say something crazy to them like we asked you to?
No, I kind of forgot about that. I have a correction already. I went 2-3 in CC. I just looked at my results, and I was like, 1-4.
You had so much fun in London, you can't even remember your games?
Yeah, you play a lot of them, you know?
A lot of them. And they put the calling the next day, like, in the same spot as PT, kind of. It's kind of hard to explain, but, like, they put it in the same, like, rows. And so it was, they really did blend together, like, in your memory.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the hall was, like, not the biggest one I had been. It was, like, the perfect size to where, like, once the event was going, like, it felt full and had energy. And, you know, it wasn't, like, other venues maybe you've been to where you're like, these like 50 tables have not been used for a single event, like just there's free tables for people to just play at. That was like not the case at this venue, which I think is cooler, which made for like a better I think event energy wise and community wise for it to feel like full and stuff. And just to backtrack a little bit, the level up for decorations and like ambiance was like up 100%. Like outside XL, there was tons of like big displays of artwork from the Junted that said Pro Tour London, like at every entrance, on the ground, little, you know, sandwich boards, etc. It wasn't just like one little tiny like 8.5 by 11 that was like printed out that said Pro Tour with like an arrow. It was like they spent money for this. And inside XL, like not even in the convention hall, they had like a whole signpost that was like Pro Tour London. And then you walk in and there's huge banners like hanging from the ceiling that delineate where other things are, and there's stuff all around the edges and everything. It looked really sick. Like
Nice.
It made it feel very festive, much more than like, you know, PTLA or even like the First Worlds. Like those are the things.
San Jose.
Yeah. Like definitely way better than that. So that was really awesome, I thought.
Where you get off the train station, like on the ground, was like a massive Pro Tour London, like on the cement. I don't know like how it was adhered or yeah. what, but it was like a massive Pro Tour London sign with like the Ignite art, and then like an arrow show. So like anyone who got off the train at that stop like had to walk right past it or over it. It was very cool to see like how well they did it.
Custom Landing, was that our train stop?
Custom House.
Custom House. Shout out to Custom House.
Shout out Custom House.
Zane, now that you've done it like 5 times, what's your favorite thing about these Pro Tours, and what's one thing you would change if you could?
So after praising it, after praising everything that they did in the last, you know, over the last couple of minutes, the player banquet, which they didn't even call a banquet, they called it like reception or something. It has gotten like worse over time. Like in Jersey, it was like good food, like a cool, like, you know, lighting, like drinks. And then like this one, there was like no food, nothing. And it was kind of at like an awkward time. It was like at 6, but then the keynote was at 7 or something. And then
7:30.
Yes. Like you wanted to stay, but then it was like
dinner.
We were in this weird corner of London where like you can't eat dinner. You need to submit your deck. Like it was just like, I guess you should have eaten dinner before would have been like the move, but it was just like at a weird time. And I liked the old format where, you know, they don't have to feed us, but like making it clear what the event is and like making it make sense, would be better. Cause like the Jersey and Lille ones were like, the food was like very good. And it was like a fun thing before the Pro Tour was cool.
Yeah.
So I guess I would change that or just kind of like bring it back to how it used to be. And then my least favorite part is trying to get dinner with all the people you want to get dinner with and like trying to herd the cats of like the people who have to go 100 different places and have like their 3 friends from wherever. And then like everyone trying to find everyone to go yeah. where they want to go is like actually insane. Like,
but you did a great job, Zane, of just being like, nope, this is the, we decided on this, we're doing this. And that was super great for all of our evenings. I was like, sick. Zane is super decisive. We're going to this place. You know, we're doing it.
I've learned from events and, you know, yeah. some of my friends like just completely opt out, right? Like Nia, who I was staying with, like literally just like opts out from like the dinner thing. Like he'll just like Uber Eats himself food or like pick up food for himself. And just like, I'm not playing this game of like, where do I want to go? Or like, what are you doing? What do you, you know, he just kind of like does his own thing, which I
was kind of sick. You would walk yeah. way less, but I actually appreciate the walk when we sit for 12 hours. Yeah. Jesus, is so much sitting.
8 rounds is a lot. Yeah,
it is a lot. And I guess I'll talk about my CC games pretty quick. I was like, okay, I just don't want to see Florian like right away. Let's get some wins going. And then round one is against a Florian, you know, a very nice gentleman from Canada. And I don't think he had any practice in the matchup because he certainly was like reading my cards as we were playing. And it was like much closer than it should have been. And I like, it was a nail biter. I like lost because I took a big risk of like throwing my leftover dagger, knowing I only had one more spinneret and a retrieve card, and I needed to, but I couldn't remember where, but I know I was in my like last 25 cards or whatever. And then I had full tempo and then just drew a hand of cards that did not convert, basically. And so I tried to like bluff, but then it just was like, oh, he blocked a little. And then I was like, sick, I have leftover cards. He definitely knows now. He sent like a middling attack. I had life or like blocked a little bit and then like couldn't convert the next cards and it wasn't disruptive. And so then he just was like, arcane seeds felling, and then, you know, just like slowly killed me. But it was very close. That I think our life totals were 1-to-1 or somewhere around there. And then I pair into Vinset, which I was like, fuck, now I've lost. Now it's going to be weird. It's going to start to get weird. I need to win this next one. And then I play Vinset, a guy from Spain, very nice. And we had a weird moment. It was one of those games where you're both I have to play around Cull, and he has to like play around my bullshit also. So we're having these weird back and forths where we're kind of having bricky hands and like not a lot is happening, or then something happens and you're like, fuck, now it's over. And then he just like bricks a turn and you're like, okay, now I'm back in this. And then you brick a turn, you know, it was like kind of like that back and forth. And we had a weird moment. And this is just a PSA to everybody. But like I went dagger. He was marked. And then I went saver, upsticks, and then other dagger, I think. No. Then it was whatever that card. Then it was Kiss of Death. And he asked, how much was that for? And I said, 12. And he said, well, wait a second. I actually maybe want to respond to one of these non-attack actions. So then we had to call a judge because I'm like, dude, you missed your window. And, you know, I didn't like play super. I wasn't like, bam, bam, bam. You know what I mean? I was like, this thing, this thing, this thing. You know, and he wanted to like, because he had taken one damage, he wanted to potentially cull me because it was in his hand to like discard my one card I have left in hand, because it was a risky play for sure. But he acknowledged, like, wanted clarification on how much the damage was. So the judge was like, so you acknowledge this, you know? And he tried to be like, well, he didn't even like close the combat chain because the dagger was still out there. And I was like, come on, dude, that's like, that's pretty weak. But anyway, so we played it. He blocked for 12 with his whole hand, etc. Game went back and forth. It's kind of a like, feels very technical, that matchup, you know? Anyway, I lose that one and I'm like, God damn it. That game was also super close. That was like, both of us were sub 5 life at the end there. And then I was like, I'm 0-2. Now it's really going to get weird. And lo and behold, this nice guy from Texas shows up and he's got max rarity Enigma playmat, max rarity Enigma sleeves, max rarity like Japanese Marvel Enigma. And I was like, this deck is going to be super weird. This guy's the Enigma guy. And he must have played 20 defense reactions. And I was like, there's no way in hell I could ever win this matchup. And he just slaughtered me. You know, it was like, you know, you play something, you react, he reacts. You're like, well, I have another one. And he's like, boom, here's another one. You're like, okay, well, this at least has go again. Here's my next attack. And he's like, bam, another defense reaction. And I was like, this is crazy. You like have put into context and like waning vengeance. Like, I'm never going
to
win.
Yeah. Welcome to the show. And he's staying on his podcast today. He's like, this guy had an Arachne tattoo. He sat down with his Arachne.
He had
Arachne sleeve. I'm like, what are you talking about, bro?
Yeah. He's like, shit's that's you. Weird.
That's I only have the tattoo, you know.
Put in context is some hateful stuff.
Yeah. And is that all you got? Like,
well, that. Most of the Enigmas were on the 12.
Totally.
The 3-4 15, blocks. And the 15, yeah. With put in context is hateful,
it's,
for sure.
It's crazy. So then I'm like, okay, it just can't get worse than this. Then I pair into another Enigma. And then that one went to time, but I had lethal. So the judge was really good about like, wait, it's time. If anybody takes a game action, you can concede here or whatever. And my opponent was very nice. She sat there and thought about the position she was in. I had the life lead. I had the card lead. And I was like threatening. I can't remember if she had like a little bit of ward or none. So like, and I'm posturing mini reactions and potentially go again, etc. And I definitely, based on her hand, had her right then. So she conceded, which was cool. which was a very sportsman person thing to do. And I didn't say anything. I just sat there and kept my eyes down because I did not want to influence their decision at all or say anything like, come on, I certainly have you right now or whatever, you know. And it was like, this is their decision. They can play and we can draw. And that would be a fine outcome. We're both 0-3. So it would be fine either way. So she conceded, so I got a win, which was great. And then I played Syndra at the end of my fifth round. Nice man from Sweden. And I stomped him. He just didn't know some of the interactions. Like the, if you have like, if you're Black Widow with Kiss of Death and you Black Widow react on it and he blocks and then you give it go again and then he doesn't block, but then you flick Kiss of Death, it still retains the Black Widow text and then they have to discard. So like little things like that. I just won and then was X3 going into draft and was like, holy fuck, I'm so tired. I can't believe I have to sit down to draft right now.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, I was going to ask next about the drafting portion because I am curious. The Taylor, this is like your first big event doing draft. Yeah. So curious about that, but we'll start with Zane's experience in draft just because you've been talking for a little bit. But yeah, totally. Curious what you drafted, how your pod went, you know, any general feelings on the shunted draft experience, whatever you get.
Sure. Yeah. So the draft, like, you know who you're playing as soon as like you sit down, right? Or like look at the pod. And you asked if I played any famous opponents. So in CC, I did not. In draft, I did. My pairing before the draft is Andrea Mengucci, who is, if you don't know, he's like a famous Magic player. He like does a lot of Magic YouTube content. He's very like nice and he's a funny guy and, you know, fairly big personality. And I know he's good at Limited and cares a lot about Limited. So I was like, okay, you know, this will be an interesting like game. I'm sure it'll like not be like a normal game where you play someone who's deeply entrenched in Fab. It'll be, you know, someone who's from Magic. But I started my draft like I always do. Pack had a D-React. I take the D-React. It was Den of the Spider. So that's the Assassin Warrior one. Then the pack that got passed to me was like very, very weak. But it had Red Alert Helmet. Which is the Assassin Warrior headpiece that like can block for two if they react. So I was like, oh, I'll take a Red Alert. That's fine. The next pack had Put in Context. So as a D-React, I'm like, great, I'll take it. And then I notice a Warrior Common missing. So I'm like, okay, I'm probably playing Assassin now that I have two Warrior Assassin cards. There's a Warrior card missing. Like, I'll just be Arachne. I'm kind of happy to be Arachne anyways. I ended up with a very strong deck for the mirror and for Fang. Like, I had 5 D reacts. I had 3 red alert. So like, I'm very strong against reactions. I have medium disruption. Like, I think I had like a couple, who cares? No one cares about the details, but, my deck was like very good against the mirror and very good against Fang. I sit down. Andrea is playing Syndra. Of course. The deck is not that good into Syndra. I have to like basically curve out every turn. I draw a hand of 4 reds. I can't convert it for block. I can't convert it on offense. And it's just like the game was basically over from there. Like, I just was felt like 5 life behind. I got down to like 1-1, but, or I think he was at 2, but the game wasn't particularly close. Like, I lost the die roll. I didn't have any like real way to win that game. Then I played the mirror and like won it. Won it fairly comfortably with all my D-Reacts and Red Alert. Like, he rolled into Black Widow, attacked for 3. I had a D-React in Arsenal. I blocked 3 with Red Alert equipment. And I was like, do you want to react? Like, you'd have to get it to 9 before it even comes over. And he just, like, passed with 2 cards in hand. I take it you can hear my dog in the background. Yeah, she's been cooped up all day. And then the last round, I played against another Syndra, lose the die roll. I'm like, great. and I lose that game. So my deck was sick. Like, I felt good about it. Wish it had a bit more disruption, but soft to Syndra, lose the die roll to Syndra. That's not where you want to be. As far as my thoughts on the format, I like it. I think it's a fun format, but I do think that it a little bit has the Phi problem from Outsider or from Uprising, where if the Phi deck is medium to good and you lose the die roll, they're going to win the game. Like, the die roll is just a little bit too important in Limited still, especially when there's an aggro deck. So ultimately, like, I like the format. I think it's good. But it has issues, for sure, which we heard a lot of complaining about Syndra and die rolls like all weekend.
I bet. I had a quick question before Taylor shares his. What, you said curve out. I don't know what that means. What does curve out mean?
Curve out, just like with Arachne in Limited, you want to dagger most turns. And so, like, you basically want your blue to dagger, play a stealth, and threaten to react. So, like, when you don't draw blue and you can't dagger, you just, like, you don't have go again. So, like, you just can't convert. You know, if you have, like, danger digits, then, like, sometimes you can, you know, go in for three, danger digits, it's a four, it hits, then you can come in for three again. But if you don't draw your yellow or blue, that's what I mean by curve out, then, like, you just lose, like, what you're doing. Gotcha. Especially, like, the deck that I drafted, which was, like, you know, four dagger attack reacts, like, scar tissues and stuff. So, like, I had a hand with, like, scar tissue and no pitch card. And it was just like, all right, this is bad.
Cool. Thank you. We all learn stuff.
Every day.
It's probably not the right term, honestly. It's just like I got flooded with reds or whatever. Like,
I mean, it sounds right good though. Curve out, you know. Like,
yeah.
It kind of means like use every resource to play something good and positive instead of leaving stuff behind.
Yeah.
It'd be the same thing like if you had like two cards, you know, and they're both head jabs and one of them has go again. So you can just go like 3-3, right? That would be like curving out also. Just efficient hands is what Zane's talking about.
The classic curve out deck is Viscerai, right? The old Mav Viscerai.
Hi, Christine.
Like, Mav Shrill Thorn is like the very classic.
Yeah. You play a blue, deck, like,
everything you get is a two cost.
Yeah, exactly. My draft. So speaking of people you know, so this is like one of the best. Experience it, not one of the best, but one of the, like an eye-opening thing being at the Pro Tour. Like, I'm underprepared because, as we know, my life has a lot of life happening in it right now, so I couldn't like get all the practice in I wanted. But what I had expected was that for all of the, like, in quotation, good players and players you know and root for on stream would all be at the top tables and I would be down there with the nobodies. But in reality, there are many people who you would know by sight and by name who had worse records than me at lower pods, at lower tables, etc. And I'm sitting there in the 2-3 bracket draft table and I got Stroop Waffle, Ian next to me that I'm passing to, Noah Bagelman's in my draft pod. Also, I'm in my draft pod.
Bagelman,
like Hamilton was down there. Shoma was totally down there. It was like
there was a bunch of people who I knew, you know, like from being famous fab players were at around my tables or whatever, you know? So, my draft experience was like, I'm glad I have drafted a ton in my life, so that I like knew what was happening at the table. But I didn't know enough about the draft format to like not be stressed out. So I was like pretty stressed out during the draft, especially because if it had been a bunch of nobodies I didn't know, I would have felt way better. But like the fact that I'm passing to Ian and Noah's over there and Logan Peterson is passing to me. Oh my God. Logan Peterson's in my pod.
Is that what we're on now?
Yeah. From Fresh and Pod, a lesser podcast than ours, but still he was there.
Jeez.
Passing to me. Well, that's only because he beats me in round three, spoiler of the draft. And I bring shame on our podcast losing to another content creator. So I apologize profusely.
We'll just stop recording right there.
Yeah, totally. This is why I got downgraded to the tiny microphone.
We stripped your mic, yeah.
Yeah. The signals were super clear. Like, Ninja was open. But I was like, there must be a like three or four fangs, though, because there are like no draconic cards. And there must be another ninja like who jumped into this seat before me. It was like probably halfway through the pack. I was like, because I kind of wanted to just force Arachne so I could just play Arachne like all day. But it was cut like super soon because there was a Arachne passing to me and then a Fang and then another Arachne. So it was like those cards were like gone really fast.
Did you at any point during the draft go?
Yeah, point to my tattoo. Only one person all weekend noticed I had this tattoo.
No way.
Really?
Yeah. People were like,
James White?
It was not James.
Oh.
Because when I wave to James like this, he can't. It's the palm of my hand.
Wave with the back.
Your hand didn't show up. So I thought when you waved at James, like I was like, holy shit, dude, that's crazy. It's just an Aurora deck.
You weren't opting with like.
Yeah, I didn't huntsmitting. Yeah, check the top card. So anyway, Ninja was super open, and I was like, okay, I'll just take Ninja cards. And I'm just taking Ninja cards. And I'm like, boy, there's a lot of Ninja cards. But the quality, and this is what kind of feels weird in this draft, I think, is that like all the Arachnes had a Majestic, you know? There was a Tarantula Toxin. I like hate drafted a Savor Bloodshed. There was two Tarantula Toxins. There was a Kiss of Death. Like there were just Assassin Majestics and like I think better quality warrior cards. So even though I was only one of two Syndras, like just my ninja cards sucked, you know, like they were fine, like they all had basically go again on them, but they all like blocked for two and I had nothing tricky and I didn't get danger digits or anything like that, you know, so I had like no extra juice. I just had to like win the die roll, draw the cards in the correct order and just go like brr, brr, every turn and win. And that did not happen. I lost my first die roll and it's like if it was Fang, if I had played the Fangs, I think I would have been able to race because they're just also hitting me with damage and I also just have damage. And if I win the die roll, I can get there. But I played Arachne and I lost the die roll, so then I just like kind of played my hand out and then was toast. Drew a hand without a blue in it and I needed a blue for that hand, no resource card, and then that game was like over basically right then. I was like, well, that sucks. Round two in the draft was my easiest round of the whole tournament, though. My opponent didn't even show up.
Let's go.
So it was just a freaking win right there. We just got it, got the dub. We're 1-1, and then I play Logan Peterson in the third round, and he has Arachne and has like just a deck. I can't block his bullshit, basically. Also lose the die roll. So he's going second and then is like, you know, doing Arachne bullshit to me, and I just can't like hold my cards and then blast him, you know. So lost there, and then we were freaking done for the day. And just the switch from five rounds is pretty, I think, doable most times. Like five is fine, but the fact that then you have to be like, okay, that's done, and then having to turn your brain on in a really different way, that's a little intense, you know. Like you have to know what your decisions are because the draft is timed, you know. It's like pass, lay them out, etc., you know. And I'm not used to it, so I felt like at any point I was like, if I mess up, yeah, I'm DQ'd or I'm cheating or something. You know what I mean? So that was like on top of like trying to read signals. So it was just like a little bit of an overload. So by the time I got to my games, I was like fried. Like that third round, that or that eighth round of the day, I was like, I've never been more tired. You know, it'd be different, I guess, if it was the championship, I would like, you know, dig deep and rise to the occasion. But it was like, I'm literally, the only thing I'm playing for here now is to go 4-4 and get to have a story on the podcast where I'm like, you know, if I just got a little bit luckier, I would have been like, you know, X and two and would have day two, you know, but those two games right there just wasn't my day. You know what I mean? That's like literally all I was playing for, which would have been a great story. But so there you go. Then the Pro Tour run ends. And like I said, my big lesson is like, oh yeah, I could play at that level. You know, it's like not as far away as I thought it was to like be able to day two, be able to like play, you know, be a competitor in the field rather than like, I felt like a bit of a body, but it was fine. So I'm glad to have gotten that experience and would like to continue to be at that level and do those things. It was fun as hell.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
One of my takeaways from the event was also, and I think it was said on like the broadcast and like other people I've heard talk about it, was just like the average level, skill level was just like higher. Like it was like pretty clear. Like from like old tournaments, you know, like you could like get an easy-ish win here or there. And, you know, I'm sure there's some amount of like luck with gem pairings, but everyone I played was like very strong. Like,
and play was clean too. Everything was clean, yeah. Which is nice.
People were discarding to Pummel and,
people were playing Pummel?
Command and Conquerors?
Well, dude,
everyone should play Pummel. It's the best card.
We were making sure we were announcing our triggers and stuff. It's like there's a level of, I think this happens in sports too, is like if you have a lot of experience in a sport and then you play with a bunch of people who don't have experience, it kind of makes the game harder because they're like not going and doing the things you expect them to do that, you know what I mean? Like a basketball analogy here, right? Is like, if I'm playing with a bunch of people who are really, really casual, they might all like crowd together and stand in the key or be in weird places that don't make sense to how they're defending our team, right? And that makes the game harder because you're like, well, now I can't do the obvious counter or whatever because people are in the way, or we're not doing the counter because people are in the way or whatever. And the same thing I feel like sometimes can happen at FAB is like when your opponent is like communicating clearly and playing like at a reasonable pace, you know, like they're playing cards, etc. They're going through their decisions at a reasonable, the game feels a little bit easier because they're responsible for their bit of communication. You're responsible for your communication and your play, and their play is clean. So it takes away a bit of that load of like, what's happening here? You know, your opponent is just clearly communicating and playing the cards correctly, you know? Yeah. So that was nice.
Easily the most frustrating games of FAB I've ever had were people who didn't say what they just like put their cards down and you're just like, what are you doing? Like, can you communicate with me? You're making it weird, but now I have all this extra cognitive load to like deal with, which is like pretty upsetting.
Yeah. I had a guy in the calling who was doing that, was like, play a card and be like, and I'm like, no, you're from England. You speak English. Like, I just need you to talk louder. You know, it's not because you're like, you know, from Slovenia and you don't know how to speak English. It's like, I know people from Slovenia can speak English. I just used a country that I knew about.
Taylor knows about
Slovenia is a country that knows English.
Slovenia is a country and outsiders.
Slovenia is a taking game.
If you're from Slovenia, post up in the comments Flame Taylor about how well you speak English. I'm just going to give
people from our country can't speak English, okay?
A separate discussion.
Separate discussion.
Taylor, you're the one who's been teaching them.
I don't teach English.
That's the problem.
The event was judged well.
Yes.
People always whine about when things are judged poorly, when XYZ is bad. No, we're going to shout out the judges. The judging staff did amazing.
Yeah, super good.
Every ruling I heard was like within what you'd expect, within a reasonable rate, speed. They were decisive, knowledgeable. They weren't reading basic cards. I know that's like they're kind of supposed to read the cards, but I love it when the judges know what Warmongers says, when they know what Burn Up Shock is. And yeah, I was just everything from what I heard in my own experience was that the judging was like, virtually perfect.
And like nobody who you called over was then also like you asked them the question, then they're like, ooh, I don't know, and needed to get somebody else. And then that person shows up and they're like, ooh, I also don't know. And then they have to go get the head judge. And then like 45 minutes go by, you know, like, and everybody was, all the judges were very pleasant people also, which I really appreciated as well. So shout out to the judges.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't heard any stories, and there was no big controversy on stream. So I think that's, you know.
Scott was there.
Because Scott was there fucking holding it down. Shout out to Scott.
Shout out to
yet
Scott.
Yet again.
You can't be pulling anything with Scott imposing over you.
That man is large and handsome and kind.
Let it be known. Is he available? Do we need to hook him up?
No, but he is having his first child, and he did say he's going to name it Taylor. So that's great.
Go.
That's great.
Wow, after my middle name?
Yeah, that's why. Your middle name and my first name, a perfect name for any gender, Taylor.
Oh, not the flesh and blood hero?
And that one. We call that... call that the triple threat.
Hell yeah.
So all right. So yeah, we both bombed out of day one is the spark notes.
Oh, okay.
Good. We have 50 minutes in. We've got to we buried the lead a bit there, but that's fine. Yeah. You know,
okay, 20 both. Minutes to talk about the top eight of what really did happen. Did you guys watch the top eight later on?
Yeah.
Or were you watching it live, or were you too busy with calling, or what was your top eight experience?
Top eight is on Sunday.
It's on Sunday, yeah.
Yeah.
Which we should be still playing the calling, but we both were not also. The games were long. It's hard to watch it. They still haven't ironed out maybe the best way to do that. They put the screen in the corner. You can sit and watch it. That's cool. But like you're at an event, you want to be playing. So it's kind of hard to like have your attention on both things. You know, you're on mobile, you're on your eSIM mobile data. You can't just like be streaming it the whole time.
Yeah. I feel like that's very true. When we were at Pro Tour LA, it was like the last thing I wanted to do was watch the actual Pro Tour. It's like, I'm here. I just want to do stuff. Like, don't
you got
to
watch
care.
Mr. Tan in person, not on the screen.
Yeah. You know, also so like, oh, I missed the sigil. Don't care. I was having fun. So, you know, I totally get it. Sure. It was fine. Yeah.
When Pablo pulled the CNC off the Phantasmaclasm, like we were playing the like Sync Below Sunday side event or whatever. And you know, a couple people here and there had their phones out streaming it, but you heard the scream from like all the Spanish guys like before it. And it was loud. Like they were very loud when it happened.
Yeah. You can hear
it. Hey, Golden!
You can hear it back on the stream too. Like
in
the commentary booth, people went nuts.
Yeah. So like, you know, we all like looked at the phone, like what's happening. But I wasn't like glued to the games, and the games weren't how the games played out was interesting from what I hear. I haven't like watched it in detail, but it wasn't any matchups that you were like, wow, I have to see how they play this. It was like, okay, it's Aurora versus Prism, or it's Enigma versus Prism. Like, we kind of know how those go. Like, you know, Prism versus Enigma gets crazy. Obviously, that game was very cool. But for the most part, it was decks we knew. The Auroras are going to do the thing, and the Enigmas are going to traverse and mirror guy, and, you know.
It was the least diverse top eight for a Pro Tour ever, probably.
Probably.
Only three heroes, two classes total.
Yeah, sure.
Leal was like that. Leal was four Briars in the semis.
Last podcast was fact-checking PT London. This is not the fact check. Blake, you are correct.
You are correct, yeah.
You're correct, Blake.
I think Leal was worse. I think it was five Briar, one...
I mean...
Viscerai, two Prism, I think, was the top eight.
Okay. I was going to say, there's only two classes in this one, but I guess that sounds like two classes, too. But yeah, pretty undiverse. Despite
Pirate
that, Rune I mean...
Blade, save us, please.
If only. Wait for the next...
Say Ranger.
I didn't notice the games were long because I was playing this at 1.5 speed at least, which was the correct way to do it, even though Sam and Pankaj sound crazy when you speed them up. And then Brian Gottlieb and Hayden sound just slightly fast, which is funny. It's like I'm like almost at double speed and they're just kind of slower. They're talking. It was very funny back to back.
That is funny.
Going through those, but overall I thought they were really interesting. I haven't seen as much Enigma and Aurora playing, so like it was a lot of me kind of like learning a lot from what they were doing, but I thought the games were pretty good, and I was pretty surprised that Prism was like, has Prism been like out there doing stuff before this, or is that kind of like a big call for this weekend?
She's been like here and there. She'll show up, and it's been known that
she won a battle harden in some random country.
Yeah, like she poses a unique
like
problem.
Slovenia.
That was my impersonation of Taylor Morrow. No, I will go back to being the fact checker of the podcast.
Get his ass.
She poses a unique problem for Aurora, right? Where Aurora is a deck with very powerful instants. They don't block well. Prism gets, you know, massive upside when she hits. Aurora plays no poppers, or three if you're on Stroopwafel, you play three. But yeah, so people knew that it was like a meta pick into Aurora, but you like have a lot of issues other like elsewhere, but the meta was so narrow that like half the room, I think, or literally more than half the room, I think, was on one of the two, Enigma or Aurora. And she does pretty well into both of those. So
yeah,
it was a reasonable call.
And you can also see now everybody's run, like who they exact, like what deck they actually played.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you can see also, people's pathway, you know,
kind of weird that you can see everyone's deck. I don't know. Like it's cool that that's an option, but I don't know if I like that. It's kind of weird. Like you can literally just like anyone on the list, you can just go get their deck.
I think it is interesting of like, is it secrets? Like, okay, sometimes somebody got ninth, like there's a new deck that got ninth and Jacob makes it for Haley and then she crushes you on a random Thursday night and you're like, well, I wish they didn't give out decks for all 900 of you guys and just the top eight. This wouldn't have happened. But it is kind of like, I did kind of see that as part of your win thing. Like, we're going to give you a bunch of money, but we're going to release all of your secrets. And now for people that don't get 8th, don't get 32, don't get 64, if you got 65th and you had a really cool deck that you didn't want to get leaked, you didn't get the money, and now all your secrets are gone, I can go look at that Max Nitro deck that made 65th and take all of your hard work and goodbye. I think it is kind of an interesting, like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, I mean, who's looking at it?
Everyone named Zane that's on a team. Somebody scraped it for their entire team, and
surely people have scraped it. Like,
yeah,
I've already seen pivots of like win rate by card. So like this card had this win rate, which like is dangerous data. Like, it's cool.
It's ChatGPT for your freaking game. when it's like you're hoping, I don't have a team, I don't have ChatGPT on my side, I'm gonna play my favorite cards and hope for the best, and everybody else is like robot as possible, and then you'll never win a game again even at the armory level.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's cool, and like the fact that they have the data, I think it's, I understand why they're making it available, because it's an unfair advantage if the LSS devs have it and then they tell their, you know, 10 friends and now there's like this information gap. But the fact that we've like very quickly gone to like win rate by card, like,
well, yeah,
that feels weird. Like,
yeah, I don't know, you know, like on one hand, yeah, I don't know. So like, you know, then there becomes like a little bit of an arms race, right? So then we're like, okay, these are like the cards everybody's using and winning with, I guess. So I'll just put those in every deck, and every deck becomes like homogenized, right? Maybe is like the worst case scenario of this. And then that's just like on the dev team to then start developing like diverse cards, I would say. So that then we can like potentially have counterplay to that. I don't know. You know?
You mean like every deck hypothetically starting with Sync, Fate, Shelter, that all you got?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, and then isn't that maybe CNC already also? Where we're at? Like what else are we learning from that? Like
that's what I'm kind of getting at here, Colin, is like we're already playing all of the same cards, most of us.
Kind of.
You know what I mean?
There was some interesting stuff to be gleaned. Like, and I didn't like go down the rabbit hole, but like there was like, you know, there was some weird card choices. Like there was a Prism in top 8 who played Essence of Ancestry in Prism. Like that's a weird choice. And like you can go now and like scrape that. Like how did Essence of Ancestry, the card, perform? You know, obviously like the CNCs and stuff get diluted because everybody's playing them. But like some of the pet cards being like, okay, how did every single person in the room who was playing Cosmic Awakening do? How did every single person in the room who was playing Truce do? And, you know, just like some of that stuff is kind of weird. But
I guess, you know, but there's so much context to that. Like, okay, well, then also what were, like, what was everybody's then matchup? You know, we also don't know how often.
There's a sideboard.
Yeah, how often those cards are sided in or sided out.
Sure.
Right? And how they're using it, right? So
that's fair.
I don't know. It's like, even though Cosmic Awakening has like a 25% win rate, you know, across all decks at the PT, like, I don't know how many times it was played. Was it cast? Was it used to block? Is it just a pitch card? Could that be any card? You know what I mean? Like, we don't have that level of data how those cards are used. So it's like, you know, whatever. And I think the other thing, in my magical Christmas land, it would be a thing that Mr. Blake Meyer talks about a lot more, is like, what's the jazz? Where's the music? Like, are we seeing how people then are like, you know, playing ancestral, whatever you said, in their deck? Like, that's kind of cool, right? Or is there more of those? Is that going to inspire people to be more creative? Because already I feel like for 90% of us, there lacks a level of creativity or deck building because it's time consuming.
Yeah. I think some metas lend themselves to creativity better than others. And I think that this one, unfortunately, diluted down to a pretty simple formula.
Yeah.
Which is not always the case, but this one certainly did. It was, you were either playing Enigma, Aurora, or something that was like very specifically targeting exactly those two.
Yeah.
And like kind of everybody in the room knew it. Like it's not always so widely known how narrow a meta like should be. Like people thought that like Barcelona was going to be like that with everyone. Like a lot of the like teams and stuff were like, it's Stromai Icelander. It's like one of the two. But that's not how the meta actually broke out. There was a lot of Bravo. There was a lot of Phi. There was Dio. Like, but this one, it was like, everybody's keen. Like, it's Enigma Aurora. And if you're not playing one of those, you have to have a good reason.
Yeah. Just to pivot us out of this tangent, I think, I don't think really my calling experience is anything to talk about, but the general, like, kind of one of the things I really loved about London was how much I actually got to hang out with Zane. Like, I spent basically 9 a.m. to 12 a.m. with Zane for like 4 days in a row. And it was
including fucking, after the tournament.
Yeah, which was fucking awesome. It was great. Zane is a great person to hang out with. Thank you, Zane, for being my friend and on this podcast. It was great. We had a game plan. We're like, all right, if we fucking ball out here in the calling, we'll just keep playing. But as soon as we're not balling out, we're fucking dropping and we're going to go do this Sync Below event this evening, because those Sync Below promos are freaking sick. And so we had the game plan, and it was something that was pretty desirable, at least for me, those Sync Below promos. So it felt like a win-win. So the pressure was off at the calling. Like, you know, I won some games, I lost some games, and then lost more games than I like wanted to. So I was like, sick. Zane also did the same thing. So let's just go like do this other fun thing we have planned now. And now the pressure's off for like the whole weekend, and we don't feel like we're, I don't know. It just felt like something really worthwhile to do, which was really fun and made for like, I think, a really good event, you know, for us. It was a good vibe switch.
Yeah, like the PT is intense and it comes with a lot of like weight. And then like once we were like past that, even in the calling, we were just kind of like, we are now back to playing the game, which
yeah,
is something I think that like suits us best. Like, you know, I like to be competitive. I like to take it seriously and like, you know, try for these PTs, and I've, you know, done fairly well at some. But ultimately, like, I still am just like a fan of the game more than a pro player. Like, obviously that's a joke. It isn't to some people, but it is to me. And I very much enjoyed, like Taylor's saying, like playing the calling and then having a plan. Like, if this doesn't go well, we're just going to get our Sync Below, play some sealed, and then go eat Lebanese food.
Oh, dude, the Lebanese food was fire. The other thing I will say that was one of my biggest takeaways from the weekend was like, and it's corny, but like James White's thing about play the game, see the world, you know, like I didn't realize how impactful or enriching this experience was going to be. I was like, oh, I'm like going to go play cards in another country. Like, how in a convention center, like that doesn't sound like as that enriching of an experience, but like, you know, there were very few repeat customers from countries. Like there were people from a different country basically every single round, and I played very few of the same deck. Like I played two Vincettes over the PT and the calling, you know, and that was like the only repeat deck I played. Oh, I guess an Enigma. But the like just that idea of like this card culture being like you can travel to then go meet people from other countries who share this hobby, this lifestyle, will you? And how like good that was for me as a person was surprising to me. I was like, wow, this is like so cool when I think back on it. And as it's happening, like my very last game I played was this guy from Australia, and he was so fun to play against, you know, like no stakes sealed game. You know, he's like, surely you don't have a react as Arachne, you know what I mean? And like would put his blocks down and be like, ha 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 ha, you know, just like having fun. And is from like, you know, traveled as far as I did to freaking get there. And the realization of like when I'm asking where people are from and they're like, oh yeah, I'm from France. And I'm like, wow, France is really fucking far away. And they're like, where are you from? I'm like, oh, I'm from California. And they're like, wow, that's really far away. And I was like, I guess so, right? Like where we are geographically in the world, I'm still thinking of like where I live. France is so far away, but where we are, you're like a 3-hour train ride away and I'm a 10-hour flight away. So I guess I am really far away from home. But so yeah, it.
They made a Spider-Man movie about that. Now you're living it.
I'm living it
in London, in England, in London.
Oh shit! I'm even better at referencing stuff. What if I talk from the heart? You know,
I'm Spider-Man. Anyway, that was probably one of the biggest takeaways. Is I feel better as a person after being in London playing a child's game.
Yeah, how's that for positivity?
16 plus. No, but I'm gonna just more or less echo the same thing, that like the play the game, see the world thing is like very real and like very positive and cool. And after like many of these PTs, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna like dial back kind of my competitive playing, you know, because like this takes too much time with my job and everything. And then like PQ season rolls around and I'm like, man, I really want to see my friends from the Netherlands, and I really want to see my friends from Canada. Like, maybe I'll try this PQ season, and then I'll go, you know, cram four of us in a hotel room and we'll all have a great time. And so it just keeps bringing me back in, because the traveling to these events and then like seeing the city afterwards is like a very special experience. And the more you do it, the like kind of better it gets, because you know more people from random corners of the world, and like that's very cool. And so yeah, we've drank the Kool-Aid fully for sure.
Totally. Yeah. It's fucking sweet.
Well, we're your top you know,
best meals. Is that what you're gonna ask? Because we have an answer.
Well, okay, we could do best meals. I was gonna ask, like, what is like the best thing you bought there, like, you know, any card upgrades, any artist proofs?
Yeah.
What's the swag, and then what was in the bag for food?
I'm not at my desk, so I don't have show and tell, maybe how Zane can do, but I would say two things were really great. Mark Poole, what a sweetheart. And he signed my EA Mask of Deceit, and it looks fucking so sick. Like, now it's like on the table and I'm like, man, that's like the cool, that looks so cool. Then I also brought a bunch of cards that are in my trade binder that nobody has ever traded for, and I just grabbed a grip of those and I was like, who's got Cold Foil EA Kiss of Deaths? Oh, this vendor does. Okay, here's this pile of cards, can I trade them for these two? And it was a straight up trade with cards like I just didn't like, two rainbow foil diadems, you know, and a bunch of other kind of crap. And it was just like a straight up trade. I was like, oh, I got rid of all those cards for these two bangers. And now every time I draw them, I'm like, ha ha, you know, it's like, it feels really good. And getting the three Fate for Scenes, I mean, the Sync Belows is sick. So feels good.
I am jealous, but I've never had tea or been to London, so I don't know why. But the cards are going to be cool, but we've been playing the old Sync Belows for 4.5 years. So it is going to be nice to see.
They're good enough for me, man.
And now they did the New Zealand Syncs, which are also sick, which no one will ever be able to get, but my best thing I got was an artist sketch from Tomash. It's a new like the hero new style ponder token,
so
it's just the ponder token, but it's new. I don't have it on me right here, so I can't show it, but that's like my favorite thing. And I got to actually use it on the weekend, even though I was playing Enigma, because I was playing Dissolve Reality. So I gave my opponents the normal ponder, and then I gave myself the cool new ponder. But then I got the show and tell time. EA Redback Shroud. Don't look too closely. It's in French. Who cares? It was like half the price.
As long as it's not in Slovenian.
True. And then this is one that I don't play Warrior really, but this has been a card that like I've always wanted to own, and the prices have gone down slowly over time. It's Cold Foil Courage of Blade Hold.
Okay, there you
go.
For the audio.
Yeah, another audio. Yeah. Show and tell moment. Good radio. But I had some cards I wanted to trade. I saw that it was like in the container for like, or like in the box for like $220 or something. I'm like, man, I remember when those were like $500-$600. Like, let me just put a trade together. And so hyped about that one. Bought a Marvel Fang adult.
Nice.
Still need to get the Syndra. But yeah, it was great. A lot of fun pickups. The vendors were cool. I don't normally chat with them very much, but I did this time, and it was a good time.
Yeah, we had a good couple of check-ins with the artists just at quiet times and talk to them like real people while they sign stuff. And that was a really good experience too, to just get to know them and a little bit of like how LSS gave them notes about how to change stuff a little bit on like their process of coming to some of the cards, like Nerve Scalpel or Cold Snap or that sort of thing. You know, some are easy, some are hard.
Yeah, the Nerve Scalpel like development was cool to see.
Yeah.
Also, Mark Poole, another note on him. I got my Ring of Roses signed, and he was asking what color I wanted, like the shadow, and I said yellow, and he was like, "Ooh, I haven't done one of those in yellow," and I was like, "Let's see," and then it looks great.
Yeah, and then I took the yellow pin and snapped it and said, "That's it, one of one,
no more." Yeah, but the signed Ring of Roses looks sweet. I think it's like particularly cool on the like one of cards, like the like Fabled's, Plague Hives. Yeah. There's only one copy. It just like feels cool. But yeah, the event was very smooth, very fun. A lot of people. But yeah, I think like most people just had like a very positive experience in London overall.
And it was, I will also say, because I feel like on other podcasts with pro players, now that our podcast has multiple pro players, you know, there's like, we're not going to have any bad beats.
This is going to get a lot serious. We're going to start talking about one for fives, one for sevens, two
for
13.
So each card is worth three, I think, is how we do this. And then it goes
up. When your cards are worth four, you get one incremental value. And if you do that 36 times over an hour, that's 36 life. And that's the game.
And that's why me and Zane are the pro players, not Blake and Colin.
Who's to say?
Who's to say? The experience of not doing good at the highest competitive event and then just getting to like hang out and play a really fun game and like do all this other stuff was fucking great. And so it's like I will try to go every time I qualify for a PQ because it's a great experience. And even if you don't like win it or top eight or cash or whatever, it like doesn't matter because it's just fucking rad to go do it anyway. You know what I mean? And like, that should be the message. Like me and Zane traveled halfway across the world and had a fucking awesome time meeting people and hanging out and shit, you know?
And then we spent the 3 days after exploring the city because the corner they put us on was kind of lame. But the rest of the city was great.
Sick. London's cool.
Yeah. Where we were was not cool. For the record, I don't know if we have talked about that, but where the convention center was like pretty lame.
Yeah.
When Taylor told me where it was, I was like, I've never heard of this. It's like, does not sound like it's going to be in a good spot.
No,
you had to walk
not.
So far for like anything. Like you had to walk so far to go to like a restaurant of any significance. And like, there was like one coffee place far, one breakfast place, like nothing was, which I was like, man, is that just how London is? And then my wife flew in Monday morning, which I knew it wasn't like going to be like that everywhere. But my wife flew in Monday morning. We go to our hotel, and like from the check-in to our hotel, we like look around. There's like 9 restaurants and 3 coffee shops like within my eyesight. And I was like, okay, here we are.
Yeah,
we have arrived.
It was shocking for sure, in a good way. Mm-hmm. Okay, last questions before we get out of here. Anything you guys got for us?
I mean, it sounded like the Lebanese was the best food, so I don't know if I have another question.
Oh, it wasn't. It was close, and it was in the running. But the Indian place we went Brick
Crazy.
Lane was so good.
So good.
What was it called?
Aladdin? Indian. It literally might be like Aladdin, which is kind of... I think it was Aladdin on Brick Lane. I'll look it up. But
or Aladdin, or I guess that's Aladdin said different. It might have been, but it did have about anyway. It was like,
I think it was Aladdin.
No, he's right that it was spelled differently than like the movie Aladdin.
Oh yeah, the last half of Paula Deen's name. Yeah. Okay.
There, it was like one of those places. There was like a number of restaurants that were like this, like a guy standing out front. And he's like, how many? Six? Yeah, come on. We have a table for you. You know, like yelling at us from the door. And he totally got us. And
who was the six you guys were traveling with? Deep. You haven't mentioned Levi once.
Levi was there the whole time.
Damn, Blake.
Jeez.
Great travel, buddy. Shout out to Levi. It was Levi. It was Grant from San Diego. Ben from San Diego. Okay. Zane's wife. Boom.
Damn.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you took that picture by the Enigma graffiti. What's
peep the YouTube thumbnail because you'll see the crew and it's goes fucking hard. Sick.
Goes
hard. Yeah, that's the thumbnail for this.
The hero.
We were like very far from that graffiti, and I was just like, we were looking at the wall of all this graffiti, and again, we're like a block and a half from it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, does that say Enigma? And then we're like, oh my God, it does. Like, all right, and I literally had my deck in my backpack. So I was like, I literally have to take a picture in front of the Enigma graffiti. But
and we got
goated impromptu photo shoot.
It was sick.
And Levi was there too.
It's the background of my work computer.
Yeah.
On the cross three monitors.
It's a good vibe.
If you're ever at an Indian place and they have Peshwari naan on the menu, order that. I never heard of it. What are you going to say?
How to look up my Google reviews, because I left a review.
Okay, Peshwari naan.
Let's not do that on the podcast.
Okay, yeah, I gotta go anyway.
It's naan with coconut, mango, and almond, like crushed up inside of it.
Holy crap.
And like with the spicy food that we had, it was so good.
So it's like a sweet pupusa?
Kind of, but it's still naan. It's still very much naan, and it's not like very sweet, but it's got subtle sweetness, and that, it was so good. Maybe the best bite I had of the whole trip. I think I had one better meal later in Edinburgh, but that was probably my favorite like single item.
It was Aladdin. It's Aladdin. Aladdin.
He's right.
Aladdin.
Wow. Aladdin. Yeah. Boom. There you go. I did. Tight. I figured it out.
Well.
And if you're wondering why we're getting out of here fast, it's because Taylor said he has to leave at exactly right now.
Exactly 2 minutes ago. So
I love you guys. Bye. London's
thanks
great.
Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you, I guess, next week because this is an extra bonus episode. Goodbye.
Wait,
goodbye.
Taylor. There's.
Yes.
That's when it's for comedic effect, you turn it off and then
funny.